Welcome to Finding Your Voice. I am your host, Per Bristow. I'm the creator of The Sing With Freedom, The Singing Zone, Speak With Freedom, Perform With Freedom, Peak Performance Mastery Training Programs, and other goodies. And here we are going to go deep into areas of voice, expression, communication, performance, releasing fears. Who are we really? How can we release what we are truly capable of in life? Get ready for some powerful conversations with some really fascinating people from all around the world. Welcome to another episode of my podcast, Finding Your Voice, and I'm here with Peyton, and I am catching Peyton in his home in Ibiza after a long flight from Sydney, but that's how it is being a busy artist. So,
superstar, man, you got to roll with it.
Yes, indeed. So first of all, Peyton, hopefully we can hear you okay now. But so thank you for being on here. We're going to talk about some really fascinating things and that you have done in your career and what you're doing.
And can you hear me now?
Yep.
Yeah?
I hear you.
I feel good.
So let me introduce you to the audience here from my perspective, and then we're going to dig deeper. So first of all, I know you as an incredible singer, and a lot of people in the world know you as an incredible singer. As a matter of fact, you were in the UK X Factor, and you were one of the favorites there. But you also had a career before that, and you've had a career after that, and you do a lot of fascinating work helping the youth and all kinds of people. So we want to dig a little bit deeper here. So first of all, you sing a lot.
not enough, apparently, according to my my husband. He said, when he married me, he thought there was going to be music in the house all the time and singing. But I was like, yeah, but, you know, it's work. I don't want to constantly hear my own voice.
Well, you were in Sydney now, and before that, you were in the Philippines.
I travel a lot. The singing is not so hard. It's the travel that I find that I consider the work part. The rest of it's the joy. Yeah. But yeah, this trip was hard. I just got back from Sydney. I went for I went really to the promotion of a single that I've just released with an Australian singer named Greg Gould. And it's the first single from his album. The album's called 1998. We did a cover of the 1998 hit record, The Boy Is Mine. It was made famous by Monica and Brandy in the States. But we've done a very different version of it and flipped the narrative and used it as a way to approach the subject of bullying and stuff. So I went to Sydney for that. And then I was there for the Mardi Gras, which I've been going to for years and involved in the various ways with Sydney Mardi Gras performing. And so I was doing a lot of gigs. And this is why. Just 40-hour journey home and really 2 weeks of constant singing. I'm surprised I can even speak. Yeah. But it was amazing.
Now, I do want to talk a little bit about the X Factor journey, but you mentioned bullying here, and you've produced videos about anti-bullying, and you consider yourself anti-bullying ambassador. So let's talk a little bit about this, what it is that you're doing in this field.
Well, I decided a few years ago, I released an album called Sinners Got Soul 2 a couple years ago, and one of the songs on the album is True Colors. Of course, Cyndi Lauper, I did a cover of Cyndi Lauper's True Colors, but another song that I wrote is called When They Go Low. And I wrote that, I based that on Michelle Obama's speech at the National Democratic Convention she was talking about, you know, how they try to explain to their kids, you know, the ugliness that was going on at the time, and still is really, when you encounter a bully or somebody who's cruel, you don't stoop to their level. No, when they go low, we go high. And obviously, she famously got a massive reaction from that. But I remember hearing those words and thinking, that's a song. You know, that's an amazing song. So that was a single from my album. And because it was, you know, it was approaching the issue of bullying, and I was severely bullied when I was in middle school. It was the first time I actually really started talking about that stuff. And I made the music video very fun so that it would be accessible to kids. And it got an amazing reaction. So I started doing more and more stuff, you know, going to the schools, working with different anti-bullying associations, and also using the video, you know, letting schools use the video to have forums, you know, to kind of open up conversations and forums with the kids. So we're doing that stuff now for a few years, and it's something that, you know, is very important to me, because I was lucky in a way. The bullying was bad, but I had a strong, you know, foundation at home. Plus, I had a church where I could sing. So, you know, I was able to continue nurturing my love for music. But had I not had those things, I think, you know, it would have probably knocked, you know, all that stuff out of me, which would have really been sad. Mm. It was really because I was involved in the creative arts in school that I was, you know, being bullied. So I'm trying to give back.
So that's interesting. So you were bullied because of, well, you were engaged in these activities. So you wanted to express yourself early on then.
I remember specifically deciding at the end of seventh grade, so I would have been, I don't know what, 11, you know, mm-hmm. That I would not be involved in any way whatsoever at school anymore with anything to do with music or theater or dance or anything like that. So I pulled out of everything, and I never did. I went through high school. I would love to have been, I wanted to be in the school productions. I wanted to do all that stuff, you know, of course. But I couldn't deal with the bullying. It was so hard that I made that decision. I made that sacrifice. But because, you know, my father's a minister, I grew up in church, and you know, especially in the evangelical churches, there's a big music, you know, music plays a big part. And so I had a chance there to be, you know, still involved with music. I was singing, you know, nobody questioned my, you know, my voice and my using it, you know, for the purpose of lifting up spirits at church. So at least there, it was almost a safe haven, you know, where I could kind of continue to sing and continue to do these things that I loved and not be called a faggot or, you know, or embarrassed or, you know, bullied for it. So, ironically, the church, you know, kind of ended up being a safe place for me as a kid to explore those things.
Yeah. And then, so you stayed away from it, avoided it then in school because of the other people then. So what happened then when a few years later?
Well, then I went away to college or university.
Right.
And I went to a small, very conservative Christian college in Tennessee. But because everybody else had also come from an evangelical background, it had a very strong music program. And so as soon as I was out of high school and I was in that world, it was all about music. You know, I partly majored in music. I was traveling all over the country with gospel groups. I was, you know, so music for the next 4 years was a huge part of my life. Yeah. Because I was in a little Christian college in Tennessee where everybody could sing. Right. So they'd all run up to church.
So at what point did you decide or feel that I'm going to be a singer?
You know, funny enough, I at no point, I mean, when because I left the church or, you know, or religion, let's say, probably around the time I was 22, 23, I realized that that there were things that didn't line up for me anyway. But I, you know, I didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, I held on to the kind of the foundation of a lot of the things that I believe and still believe to be true and to be the way forward in terms of how to live your life. But I just left the religious part. And so for me, because music and the church had always been hand in hand, I just never imagined a kind of secular career in music. It was never something that I considered. Mm. So I didn't have, then I went away to graduate school and then, you know, I had all kinds of, you know, adventures or whatever. I had my first hit when I was 33. I wrote my first song. I would have written it, I guess, when I was 32. It was an accident of destiny. And then it got signed to a record label in the UK that was a big house music label at the time, and it went number one all over the world. I was 33 years old. I had a master's degree in English literature, but I'd been waiting tables for years. I lived in Colombia, South America, teaching, at a university, teaching literature. Worked in New York City as a waiter, and then I moved to London, and then it was so weird, and it's actually really random how that happened, because I never ever did I think, oh, I'm going to be a singer, So when I left the church, it was like, well, that was that. It was for me, God and church and music, that was all connected. So I never thought about taking the pieces apart and rearranging them,
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And by the way, this album that you have out now, The Sinners Got Soul 2, I really, of course, recommend everybody to listen to it. I think it's amazing, frankly.
Oh, thank you very much.
And let's see what it was that led up to that. Well, as a matter of fact, let's jump to that, and then we'll come back again, because the X Factor thing is all in between now. But what is it that brought that out of you to create this?
The album, Sinners Got Soul 2? Yeah. Well, let's take it back a little bit. So yes, in 2003, I released my first single. It was a song I wrote called A Higher Place. And it came out on a record label called Head Candy, spelled HEDKANDI, a very famous British house music label that did like really kind of funky, soulful house. Mm. And that launched my career. It was my kind of foray into dance music that I've been carried on doing and have continued doing for the last, 18 years. Mm. About three years ago now, I've had a significant dance music career, but it's been all over the world. I've traveled all over Russia singing and all over, everywhere. There's hardly a country I've wanted to go to that I haven't actually at some point or another had a gig in, which is amazing for a little preacher's kid from Virginia who never set his sights on being a singer, but I never had that kind of big crossover commercial success. And to be honest, I wasn't focused on that. I didn't really care. But at some point, about 3 years ago, my manager kind of convinced me, it was not an easy job, that I should audition for the X Factor in the UK. The way he put it was like, look, why not? It's like, we know what it is. We know what the show is, but it's, at the end of the day, it's a massive platform. Even if you're on for one show, you get all that exposure. And as an artist, it's useful to have the profile, and it may just lead to something, who knows, but why not? I kicked and screamed. I really kicked and screamed because, it was hard for me just to take that step back and kind of, it's like almost like admitting that somehow I hadn't had enough success, which of course I hadn't had commercial success anyway, but to have to like, kind of put myself in that vulnerable situation, which I also knew was putting myself in a situation which is, not entirely about talent, because I know how these shows work. So, that you're putting yourself in a situation that could go very wrong. And I fought with it. And then I thought in the end, finally, I don't think you get to the end of your life and think, oh man, I wish I hadn't tried that. I wish I hadn't given that a go. You're not going to get to the end and think, oh, all those things the doors I reached for, I wish I hadn't reached for them. I thought, what do I care? Do I care? Go on, be myself, do my best. If it all goes terribly, disastrously wrong, whatever, So I had to get, I had to get to myself into that place where I knew I was going into the lion's den, and I needed to be able to walk away from the circus with my head held high and feel good about myself, whatever happened, because I had to be prepared for the possibility. You can go on, and Simon Cowell can look at you and go, well, your eyes are too close together. You're obviously way too old to be, pursuing a career in pop music now. And if you were going to be a bigger success, you'd have been one by now, get out. I mean, you have to go in knowing that could happen.
Yes.
And that's hard if you've already you've got a fan base all over the world that are going to be going, why did you do this? You know what I mean? Like, why did you even do it to begin with? I had to, and a lot of people were not happy about it. You know, my fans were like, why are you doing this? You know, because to them, I was a big star. But it's like, well, because it's a platform that I can, use. And also because it scared me. It scared me so much. Like, the whole thing, at some point, I recognized that that's why I had to do it. I actually had to do it because it terrified me so much that I had to prove to myself that I was not going to let myself be ruled by fear. And so what's the worst that could happen? That's the worst that could happen. You know,
you
get humiliated, but that didn't happen. You know, I mean, I had an amazing reaction from the UK public, a very strange exit, which didn't go down well with the UK public. You know, I walked out with everything that I'd walked in with, you know, and the knowledge that I didn't let fear dictate, you know, a decision that ultimately was a hard one for me to make, but I was proud of myself for having done it. And I did it, I think, with grace and, you know, an authentic version of myself. And it's all you can do, you know?
Yeah.
So it was interesting. But when I came out of that, I recognized that I was ready for change, you know, and that was also another reason that I did it. It was just, you know, just looking for ways to change as an artist. You know, I always say, like, the two biggest enemies of an artist are our ego and complacency. You know, it's like, because they're both very destructive, and also we're really prone to kind of give in to both those things, you know, quite easily. So I wanted to change and just look for different ways to approach music and my career. So when I came out, I was like, you know, I've done the dance music thing. It's great. But actually, really, as a songwriter, I want to be writing songs. We can remix them for the dance floor. But actually, the original version is not necessarily, you know, made for the dance floor. Mm-hmm. And it just opened up, you know, the possibilities for me. Because for me, you know, music is ministry, not in any religious way, but, you know, I see what I do as a type of ministry, trying to, you know, use the gifts that I've been given to raise people's frequencies, you know, lift spirits and encourage, and, you know, like my father does, you know, as a minister, to give people hope and to use it as a kind of positive weapon in the world, you know, and as a force of light. So I just wanted to sort of start trying to expand that platform. So I started working on this album. And I took some of my dance records that had been very big records for me, and I stripped them completely down and, like, took them back to, like, what they probably, like, I did the version that, you know, that sounded like that would have been the original version. But, you know, actually, no, funny enough, it's the 17-year later version, because the original was a house record, you know?
Yeah.
And so down to some of my records down to their gospel roots. And then released Sinner's Gospel 2 and as an independent artist. It was an amazing experience. A real learning curve.
Yeah, amazing. Well, you've mentioned a bunch of things here that I think are really interesting that I think we should all embrace. One thing you said that I found very fascinating and inspiring is that when you said you did it because you were afraid.
Yeah.
And that's, I think we could all recognize that.
At some point, just that can be enough of a reason to do it. It's like,
yes,
there were other reasons to do it, but in the end, I said to myself, if for no other reason, that already by itself is enough of a reason. I have to do it. I can't walk away from it.
That's an amazing mindset, I think.
Well, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I remember the day I got the call from my manager to tell me that I'd gotten through. Mm-hmm. The round where I would be going and being filmed, you know, because, you know, there's a series of,
right,
you know, even if you're going in a little bit above the average, you know, audition for everybody, I mean, there's a series of kind of hoops you've got to jump through. And I got the call that I was going to be, you know, auditioning in front of Nicole Scherzinger.
Yes.
You know, and Simon Cowell and whatever, Sharon Osbourne. And I literally was in the fetal position on my, here in Ibiza, downstairs on the sofa for, I mean, 3 hours, using a word that I won't repeat here on your podcast. And and my husband would be like, baby, isn't this that point where you're supposed to be like is celebrating? You just got good news from your manager that you got through. And I'm lying there like, you know, twitching. He's like, are you sure you're up for this? I'm like, I have to do it. So
this is so fascinating because, you know, a lot of my coaching, especially when it comes to the peak performance coaching, is the fundamental principle in my mind is to become aware of your fears. Because many times in life, we're not aware of the fears. We just stop ourselves. We have all these restrictions and we don't do, we don't follow our dreams. We don't go for it. And we're not aware of all the blockages that we have.
Yeah,
because of the fears, but often we're not aware of them. And apparently you are very aware of your fears here. But then what do you do with that? Because then you did go into the next step then in front of them. So did it go well? Apparently it did for most in most people's opinion. Did you feel that it went well?
It went amazingly. But I this thing about fear, you know, that I remember the first time I read that quote from Marianne Williamson, and I couldn't quite grasp it. I knew that it was the truth, but I didn't understand it. It says, our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. Mm-hmm. It is our light and not our darkness that most frightens us, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, that's really strange. You know, why would I be afraid of my light? You know, why would I be afraid of my power? You know? And yet that's exactly what I, you know, it was like when I was in that moment, I remember standing there and kind of being completely present, thinking, I'm singing. I got Sharon Osbourne crying, you know, Nicole Scherzer's over there telling me that she wants to smack me and I'm so good, you know, Simon Cowell saying, you know, it was one of the best auditions, you know, seen, and that I was a real artist. And, I mean, you know, whatever. They're saying whatever they say. But, you know, I'm standing there thinking, I was so terrified of this, you know, and now I'm here to say, why? Because I knew I could do it. You know.
So what did you do then to come alive in that moment when you step into the room? What is it that happens then that brings out the best of you?
You know, I always approached because my history with music is gospel, and I think gospel is a great training ground for a lot of singers. And of course, as we know, a lot of the great singers that we all know, you know, grew up with gospel music backgrounds. But the reason for me, I mean, obviously the power in the music and all that is in the way you sing is great. But for me, what I took from that as a kid that I still apply, and still before I step on a stage or before I do, you know, anything in front of people, I close my eyes, I just try to disconnect the voice and what I'm about to do from the body and the ego, and recognize that I'm just a vessel. You know, like it's just whatever. It's like some skin, and you know, and all this is a vessel. And so I'm channeling something from somewhere else. And I don't, know exactly what or who or, you know, what that looks like, but I feel it, you know, and I know that it's not about me. And so I've done that always, even when I left the church and I stopped, you know, thinking of God in the way that I did when I was a kid. For me, before I go on a stage, I'm, and then I'm present, and then it's not about me, you know. And I think this is very powerful. I think this is very important as an artist. When you really do learn to understand that you've just been lucky enough, you've been bestowed this gift, you know, that whatever it is, you know, music or whatever, dance or whatever it is that your gift is, you know, that you've been given this gift, and that it is your responsibility then to use it. How you do that and what way you want to do that, you know, is up to you, but to use that gift. And so for some, and then in my case, it's for some sort of good, you know, to lift the frequency, to take things higher. And then I did that. I did that before I walked in. I disconnected and I treated them like I would have. They'd just been four complete unknowns in a bar somewhere, in Sydney. You know, I don't.
Yes.
Brilliant. Because in that moment, it doesn't matter anyway.
Yes, fantastic. This is so good, Peyton. I'm so glad you're sharing this.
Thank God.
You know, I say what?
But thank God I'm interesting. I mean,
well,
nothing interesting to say, Peyton.
No, well, here's the thing. I talk a lot about transforming fears into freedom and then ultimately into peak performance. So what you just shared here was actually very different from what most people would approach it, although they would like to approach it the way you did it, but they're not conditioned to do it. So most people will step into the room with the, I need to prove myself. I want to be good. I'm self-conscious because I feel I'm being judged. And in that moment, I'm actually judging the audience or them. And so it's all this judgmental stuff going on, proving myself. I need to do good. I need to, and they're thinking about the result they're going to achieve. And this applies to the sports field, applies to anywhere, right? We all want to win. We want to achieve greatness. Absolutely. But the way you did it was actually the other way around. You let go of that, and there was a sense of trust. You talked about being a vessel and also being present. So therefore, it's not about the future. It's not about the past. You then get into the so-called flow state, the zone. You can, and that you're really present in the moment, and you're not judging them to be somebody specific. You are there with a sense of love and sharing. So it's all these things that made you come alive. And the fear that you had beforehand had really nothing to do with that, although it heightened the reason to do it, yes? Meaning it wasn't just, I'm just going to work, I don't care. No, there's a big high level of caring.
The hard part of the process was that for me. Not once I was in it, once I was on the train, you know, but for me, it was the deciding to reach for the door. That for me, that was perhaps the most interesting part of the whole process, because that was the hardest part for me to just decide to do it in the first place, to make myself.
And you might not have had that amazing audition and it wasn't just one, that was the audition. Then you have several performances after that, but you might not have had those great performances come alive in that way if it hadn't been preceded by the stakes, the fear.
I think you're probably right. I wouldn't have. And you know, look, I was also a little bit longer in the tooth than most of the kids that were, you know, I mean, when I say kids, I mean, they are in those programs, kids. Right. I felt like I was working as a counselor, to be honest, because on the inside, I was seeing these kids being told over and over again, because that's part of it, you know, it's psyching everybody out to think that they've gotta, you know, it makes good TV, you know, this is their one shot, you know, they're kind of pitching it like this is your one to make it in business. Yeah. And if you don't, your dreams are shattered forever. And well, now if you're 17 and you're going back to a little tiny town where you're working the till at a supermarket and you're, you know, that's tough, you know. And so I was constantly sitting down with kids and going, listen, you're 17 and you're on X Factor. I mean, you know, that you're already like way ahead of the game. And people have been making a success of their, you know, artist lives long before Simon Cowell and long before any of these reality TV shows. You know, there are lots of ways to get there. This is not the way. And even the ones who win, how many times do we, you know, see them having a long, fabulous career, you know? So even the ideal scenario in the end doesn't necessarily give you any kind of sustainability. So to be an artist, you need to just like accept that this is really what you want. Are you sure? You know, think about it. If that's what you really feel committed to do in your life, then you're going to find a way to do it, you know? And this is just a stepping stone. Use it as a stepping stone. I had this conversation with so many people because they were crushed.
Yes. And you're right. It's set up that way because of the drama. And then suddenly people are felt to be losers.
And
so what's so interesting with you here, Peyton, is that what you have expressed very clearly here, you feel that you are a vessel for something, you are an inspiration, and apparently you are at backstage also with the kids. You have done it in your life, so you are trained, you've become used to being in that situation. You are there to give, to share on a deeper level rather than just to prove yourself and have a career. So let's talk.
To me, it's the only part that's literally for me at this point, it's the only part that's interesting. Like for me, like I really have got to the point in my life where if I can't see an actual purpose behind whatever the project is, whether it's a song or whether it's an album or I don't know, whatever it is, for me, if there's not some sort of, and it's not because I'm some, you know, over do gooder kind of one, you know, no, it's not that. It's because I'm a selfish, you know, person like everybody else. But that's part of, it's actually the selfishness I get so much out of, you know, feeling that what I'm doing has some sort of intention. And I've been trying for the last couple of years to really, really question everything before I decide to do anything. What is my intention? What's my purpose? Why am I doing it? Is it because, you know, at least be honest with myself. Is it, I'm hoping this is going to blow up and I want to be famous? Is it because I want to win a Grammy? Is that my, you know, is that my end goal? Is it because I want to make a lot of money? Is it because I want everybody to know me? And I mean, all these things, like, what is it? What's your purpose? You know? And I think you go in a lot of times, especially kids, because there's so much emphasis now on fame. Everybody's wanting to kind of, you know, be a star overnight, having no clue that the fame is that's the price tag you pay for your success. But the fame is actually often the worst part of the package. You know, mm-hmm. if you are, you know, lucky enough to have that kind of big crossover commercial success, and so getting to that point in my life, in my career, where I redefine what success means to me. My dad said to me last year, my dad, as I said, is a minister. He said, you know, your mother and I pray for you all the time. And we pray that God will make you successful, that God will bring you success. And it kind of struck me as a little bit weird. I was like, because I don't have the same concept of God anymore as they do, but it's all the same thing to me anyway. And I said, Dad, I really appreciate that. But do you mind if I ask you to modify the prayer a little bit? When you pray, can you pray that God continues to use me and continues to make me a success? Because I think, you know, it's so easy to have this idea in your head that if you haven't earned a certain amount of money at a certain point, or you haven't won the accolades that go along with this career, that you're not a success. But I've been living and working off of music for 17 years full time. I mean, this in itself is, you know, it's like that is a successful life already. But for me, the success is not even that. The success is the doing the good that you can do. You're in this position. You have a chance to give something to somebody that you would never know. They're on the other side of the world hearing your song, and they're in the hospital and they're listening to something, you know. Music is so powerful because there's no boundaries, there's no borders, it goes everywhere. And over the years, I've had so many people message me and say, wow, Peyton, this track did this. And that's what, they're my Grammys. When somebody says to me, oh, I was going through a divorce and this track of yours got me through it, it's my Grammy. You know, it's like, that's for me is what success is. So I think it's really important that artists just be honest with themselves and define what it is that they want, because, you know, then start manifesting it. And if it's being a big, you know, famous artist, good for you, you know, and that's okay too. Well, I mean, it's just a question of, you know, knowing what it is that you actually want. At this point, I don't want to be Beyonce. I really don't. You know what I mean? Like, no. It looks way too exhausting being Beyonce.
Well, yeah, maybe.
Can you imagine?
Well, I've had the pleasure of seeing you live, and we now get deeper insights into why you are so good at connecting with an audience. And I saw you in a smaller place, and I know that you connect with an audience when it's thousands and thousands and thousands of people in the audience. And then not all artists can do that. They might be great musicians and great singers and connect in that way, but you have something special, I would say, and I thought that was very interesting.
I think that I call it the energy whispering sometimes. It's like almost like, sometimes better than other times, but I mean, I've had times when I've stood on a stage and I can look out and I can actually see almost like in color where the energy in the room is, you know, like, it's like, okay. And kids, for instance, their energy is always pure, you know? So if you're somewhere where there's children, if you direct, you know, start directing your energy to a place where, you know, you can literally take that energy and move it around the room, until everything's connected. I mean, a lot of that's come from the years of training. Working in dance music, I was often singing in, you know, nightclubs where people were either drunk or high or both, you know, it's 2 a.m, 3 a.m, I'm going on a stage, not singing to people who bought a ticket to come see me.
Right.
People that are happen to already be in a nightclub partying, and I've got to get their attention. And in 15 minutes, I got to make it worth the promoter's money that he spent to fly me to the East End of Russia for a gig in the middle of, you know, the night. It's like, so I don't go on and chat, and I don't go on and sing, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb. It's like, I got to go on and I got to take the light and go, oh, you know, like full on. And then, and years and years of doing that. And not always, I mean, sometimes more successfully than others. And, you know, sometimes, you know, like, and then I've learned, you know, like that, how to connect with an audience. I mean, I don't know how that's just training, almost like training yourself. Cause you know, you've done it. Like, you know, you walk in, like, this is going to be tough, but then you do it, you know, you like, wow. Yeah. Okay. It took me I've got a half an hour here in 10 minutes. Oh, I've just done it. I flipped it. Now I've got everybody. I've got everybody in my hand now. But that's like...
That's got to feel amazing to be able to do that.
Well, what was amazing was at some point recognizing that I was recognizing that I was doing it, almost like I was, you know, like a surgeon or something. You know what I mean? Like, right. I was, you know, I'm kind of like, wow, I know what I'm doing. I know how, you know, but I couldn't explain it to anybody. You couldn't sit down and write a book, or I don't know how I'd give a workshop on how to, like, you know, I don't know, because it's just from having done it in the worst situations. I mean, and also singing with the worst sound system. You know what I mean? Like, I've had like all these challenges as a singer, like, because, you know, most artists are in a situation where, yeah, you got a mic that works well and people are sitting and they're kind of meant to be listening. I mean, me, it's like, oh my God, for years, I'm like, everything about my setup is like wrong. It's like, you know, it's like, it's working against me, you know, like everything's kind of a challenge. Yeah. So maybe so many years of having to do that at some point paid off.
That's also tough on the voice.
Oh, yeah. Well, as I said, I think you were there for that night when I said that I was talking about why I came to your series through our mutual friend, Jason Gardner, because I had been singing like that for so many years that I knew that since I was changing music and styles and stuff, that I wanted to be able to, you know, to sing without feeling like I was giving birth to the note, to the notes through my mouth. Do you remember?
Yes.
And because, you know, that's what it's felt like for, you know, for years. And you're right. I mean, of course it's not healthy, you know, 15 minutes of like, ah, you know, but I mean, I can still talk.
But that is the tendency for everybody who has a really powerful voice. The tendency is, of course, that you want to use it and that you tend to use it. And when you're in a situation like that in a loud environment and you have to get the attention, of course, you give it all you got. And yeah. Of course, my philosophy then is that if we develop the muscle isolation skills and also do the healing in between so you can recover quicker, you can have the same impact, but not as much of a physical breakdown, but also to recover quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that series helped me a lot. And still does, really, just being able to, you know, kind of, yeah, having to retrain so I don't have to force, being able to have that power without force, you know. And now I'm really aware of it. Like I'm standing there and I'm aware, I can hear and I can feel that what's coming out feels and sounds powerful, but I don't feel that I'm forcing it to the edge of the cliff. You know what I mean?
That's brilliant. And for those who don't know what we're talking about, when Peyton has mentioned the series, then that is My Sing With Freedom, the Singing Zone training program. More power with less effort is a very powerful concept in life, isn't it?
Well, I think, yeah, because it extends to more than just the voice then, you know, in a way, like, then that everything is connected. So once you learn that, it's like learning just to live your life like that, you know. More force with less effort.
Yeah. Right. Because force, and then I talk about this, but just for those who may not have done my training, so we talk about, you know, force, the law of physics, a force always has a counterforce. So when we try to force something, we also meet resistance, tension, a counterforce. So that applies to, you know, pushing against a wall. It applies to trying to get someone to do something for us. We try to force someone to do something, and well, we force the audience to love us. We're going to meet resistance. It's not going to happen, right? And we try to exactly. Right, exactly. Or force the people to so it's very interesting, but we fall into those traps, all of us. And because we want to get something done. I want my voice to be loud. I want to get the high note out. And we have this desire, and I want the result. I want to make the sale. I want my kids to follow my instructions. You know, we fall into these patterns. When we can then discover, then we can, if we instead can release the resistance within ourselves, out there, we actually become more powerful. The voice becomes more powerful, and we become more powerful. You become a more powerful communicator.
And it just takes, I think this is a question of consciousness, even being aware, you know, being aware of this stuff in the first place. You know, I mean, it takes, you know, getting, I don't know, older and reading and being exposed to things, and hopefully, you know, the universe brings things into your world and into your consciousness so that you start to kind of, you know, take it in that you have the power to change these behavioral patterns that, in a way, we've been reinforcing since we were kids. Then you have to unlearn them as adults, you know, and then slowly sort of stepping back. I mean, for me to be, I was like in my mid-40s doing your, you know, I mean, having had a career in music and singing all these years, but recognizing that I needed to actually train myself to step back. You know, that I've been going, you know, so full on. Did it work? Yeah, I had a career, whatever. But also, I knew that what I wanted to do now needed to not be that. You know, I needed a different skill set. You know, and also, in order to have longevity as well, I needed to start protecting my voice.
And that also speaks to your mindset. It is the successful people who also always love to learn and develop and find new ways and.
Yeah.
So great.
But keep yourself from getting bored. Let's face it. We all get bored as well. Get bored of ourselves. You know what I mean? I think, God, you know, I want to learn. I'm constantly like thinking, yeah, what can I do? I mean, like lately I've been teaching myself video editing. Like I've always been like a technophobe, but I'm getting really good at it. And it's actually fun because it's creative, but in a different way, you know, and I can little promos and stuff, and just stuff like that, you know, like as an artist, just to keep pushing yourself so that you're, you know, you're constantly learning something new.
And you recorded the Sinners Got Soul too, then in you have a studio there in Ibiza. Is that where you recorded it or?
No, it's not. And I mean,
created in the studio.
I have a studio here, but it's never really all put together. And if I'm honest, I never really quite managed to learn how to get my head around the, you know, the technical side of it.
That's
I've been all this buying all that stuff And yeah, my husband will, you know, be laughing because he's giving me so much, you know, such a hard time, because I can get so boring, like that technical side. I just want to be like, now everybody's got their gifts.
I just, it like, sounds amazing though.
Yeah, producers that they're really good at that, you know. So no, I go to London. I was working with James Reynolds. He's an incredible producer. He's produced a lot of amazing big albums, big artists. And he did the album, and we recorded everything in London in a proper studio. I didn't have to push a single.
And where can we hear it? Spotify.
If you go to PeytonMusic.com, it's a website but that's like a portal. So there's links to everything there, you know, Spotify, YouTube, and whatever. And it's P-E-Y, like Peyton Place for the Americans. Only Americans really ever know that, but P-E-Y-T, or Peyton Manning, P-E-Y-T-O-N, Music. Sinner's Gospel 2 is on Spotify. Or you can hear me doing a lot of it live, or see the music videos from it. I produce the music videos with a really good friend of mine who's an incredible visual artist, Kathy Macca, and the two of us, with the help of a really clever video guy. It was just the three of us, Phil Berman and myself and Kathy. We made these videos, and we did like a little trilogy for the singles. We had three singles, and then we did these incredible music videos for each one. And they're really unusual. So it's worth going on the YouTube page and having a look at that. So youtube.com/PeytonMusic.
Yep.
Promo.
And then they can follow you on Instagram. That's also Peyton Music, yeah. Right?
Yeah. What's that?
Instagram.
Instagram is Peyton's Music. You got to add an S. You know, it's one of those where like so annoying. And Twitter's like that for me too. So like that's like my Twitter and my Instagram is like Peyton, but then with an S, Peyton's Music. Whatever. That's why it's easier to go to PeytonMusic.com and then just go on.
Fantastic. Well, continue your amazing work, both as a singer, as an entertainer, as an inspirer, but also your amazing work with youth and in the world of bullying, anti-bullying. You do speaking engagements also for the youth, and so it's beautiful.
It's amazing. I mean, one of my heroes is Maya Angelou, and she says, you know, when you get, give, and when you learn, teach. And I love this. I think, you know, this is such a great mantra for life. And as we get a little bit older and hopefully a little bit wiser, and you have a little more to say, to be able to turn back around and help the next one in line, I think it's very important for artists to do that, you know, especially if the God or universe or whatever has been so good to you to give you this life. Yeah, give back. Always give back, you know, every chance you can. And you don't have to give money. It's like giving, a lot of people think the whole concept of charity is money. No. What really matters is your time. Mentoring, you know, find somebody that needs your help, needs your advice, give them that time if you can. And I've been trying to do more of that.
And I also think it's worth noting then that you know, that term of giving back, it's not that Peyton has been taking and now he's giving back. The truth is that you've experienced your success because you've always had that mindset of giving when you're on stage, whatever situation you're in, and that is what comes back to you. So,
yeah, and maybe growing up, you know, with parents from ministers and growing up in that world, it was ingrained in me, you know. Yeah. Because that is what ministry is. It's giving. It's giving to others, in some sort of spiritual way, or you know. But we all have that. We're all ministers. We all have the power to be that. You know. We can all do that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just smiling at a stranger in the street. I think sometimes if that's sometimes the only thing you can do that day, do that at least. You know.
Yeah.
choose kindness in some small way every day. You know. And we need this more and more and more, you know. But when we do this, I have this theory about darkness, you know, that darkness doesn't actually exist, that it's just the absence of light.
Right.
So, you know, actually, you know, you can't create darkness. But what we can do is when we let our light shine, we illuminate darkness. So we can dispel it, you know. So anytime that we're in a situation where we feel like this is a dark, it's not, there's no such thing as darkness. You just let your light shine, illuminate all that dark space. You know, and you see that this darkness is dispelled, and we all have that light. We are all born to shine anyway, like children. And you know, when you accept that and you embrace that and you celebrate that and you let your little light shine like we used to sing in church, you know, you don't hide it under a bushel. You start to then tap into your full potential as an artist, as a human, as a brother, as a child, as a son, as a force, you know, a force of power, and to do something good. God, go do something good.
Amazing. Hey, Peyton, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Sorry for the panda eyes and oh my God. I mean, I'm going to be in a coma in about a half an hour, but it's good to see you and you're looking good. You have panda eyes. What's your secret?
Well, hey, I slept.
Nah. But
we will now let you sleep.
You look like you're 25.
I am. Didn't you know?
Right. Yeah.
All right. Hope to see you on live one of these days soon.
Yes.
Get some good rest.
Come to Ibiza.
Big thanks to you who have watched or listened to this. Hope you are inspired to go out and shine your light, because as Peyton said, you have enormous resource for light. So Peyton, wish you all the best.
I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. From Ibiza, big besos, and to everybody tuning in, yes. Yeah, get in touch and follow me.
There you go.
Look to the light.
We will. Thank you, Peyton. Bye for now.